So yes, I've called this spirituality in the mind. Not sure why. Well, let's find out. When we settle down to meditate, it's good. It's good for the bell to ring. It's good to turn off your phone, yes. For those listening in, just hang on a minute.
It's good to be prepared for the unexpected.
That's it. Hi, Liz. So yes, when we settle down to meditate, it's good to get into the habit of just checking in, just to see what our state of mind is like before we begin our meditation, so that we can just see what our starting point is. Where are we? Now, if you're new to meditation, you'll come with all sorts of expectations, but actually, mostly meditation will consist of lots of sessions where we just kind of perhaps feel mildly better afterwards. There'll be sessions where we feel a bit frustrated afterwards, but nothing particularly dramatic changes. We just, oh, there we go, that was my meditation. That doesn't matter. Because it all builds up, it slowly changes us. And because of that, it's healthy to actually to check in, because it keeps encouraging us, because we start to notice the change. If we don't check in and see how we are, what state of mind we are, if we don't notice, then we're not going to get that encouragement. And we need that. Meditation is hard. If we're going to set up a discipline of daily meditation to do it, we've got to encourage ourselves. So how do we do this checking in? We can look at many aspects of this, but one way to do it is to look at what we call the spiritual faculties in Buddhist practice, and there are five of them. They're arranged in two pairs of opposites. Now, I know what you're thinking straight away. Hang on, two didn't go into five. But there's one in the middle. Okay. So you can see them as two sets of lines on a graph, if you like, opposite to each other. So let's take a look at these and see how these opposites work. The first one, it's known as prajna. And actually, this translates to wisdom. Straight away, all sorts of connotations and interpretations of that word come in. Here, in this state of mind, we're talking about the mind in a cerebral place, a thinking place, an academic place, if you like. It's a reasoning state. The opposite of this state is called shraddha. And in this state, we're actually, we're kind of swayed towards faith and a feeling of letting go in the world. So you see how the two are opposite each other. And hearing this, you might think, from what you might have learned about Buddhist practice, that shraddha's the way to go. Letting go. Faith. Just let go of all that thinking. But actually, no. Because the extreme of shraddha, this letting go, is you'll believe absolutely anything you read. You'll just be totally led by it. You're happy to go along with it all, and actually your meditation will not be present. It'll be lost in a trance-like state. I must say, I'm not seeking to discredit other meditation systems. There are meditation systems that actually seek out a trance-like state. Things like transcendental meditation, the clue's in the name. Buddhist meditation, we're not doing that. The Buddha discovered that to make progress, we've got to be fully aware, fully present. So we have to balance out this letting go state, Shraddha, with actually Pranya. The mind has to be engaged. It's got to be present. But of course, too much Pranya, and we'll be overthinking our meditation experience. We'll be wrapped up in thought. It'll be all academic. There'll be no experience. So we need to find the balance between the two. The other two opposites that we experience are virya, which means enthusiasm, energy. I always have too much of this stuff. It's incredibly important. It battles against sloth and torpor, sleepiness. It gives us strong intent in our meditation. Intent is so important in our meditation. So it keeps us going in our practice. It's where our tenacity comes from, actually. So it's very important. The opposite of this one is samadhi. Now, this is the meditative state of concentration and absorption. So, different to pranya. The concentration of pranya, the wisdom bit, is applied thought. Samadhi is applied non-thought. Okay. That's the nature of the concentration. It is that deep sense of presence within the meditation subject. Now, of course, this is a good thing. But if we have too much samadhi, too much of this concentration, and too little virya, we'll be stable, we'll be very stable, but we'll be completely lackluster. Our meditation won't actually achieve anything. It'll be a static thing without life. We'll just be sitting with the breath and no experience. And one of the outcomes of meditation is emptiness. But meditation is not empty. Sounds like a contradiction. The emptiness we talk about with Buddhist meditation is a realization. It's not an experience. The two are different, and we will come back to that at some point in our meditations. Our meditation, our actual experience of it, has to have presence. It has to have life. Those of you who study Tai Chi with me understand when I say we need life and tone in our Tai Chi. We don't want blancmange Tai Chi. We don't want to be just some floppy thing. We've got to have life and energy. And it's the same with meditation. Meditation is an active, engaged state of non-thinking. It's interesting, isn't it? But of course, if we have too much virya, too much energy and not enough samadhi, we'll be fidgety and distracted and not able to focus the mind. There's a state sitting right in the middle of these two opposites. And it's mindfulness. That's what's sitting in the middle. Or rather, this is what's required to balance those other states out. So personally, in my practice, I've not found that that mindfulness is it's not a resultant state. I see it as a practice that helps us to achieve a balanced mind. So all well and good, but how does this sit with spirituality? We've talked about mind states at the moment, but the original premise of the talk was spirituality in the mind. So one way to tackle this is to simplify it further. Because what do we do with this? How do we balance these things out? And I was thinking about this during the week, and in my view, there are two main types of spirituality, okay, in a general sense. The first type of spirituality is very grounded. It's in touch with the earth. It's in touch with the body. I don't have a great deal of knowledge of America's First Nation or some of the shamanic systems, but from what I've seen, they seem to be very grounded earthly systems. They're very connected with the body. When we do the shamanic trance dance upstairs, you're very much in touch with the body. You're firing it with the breath of fire. Very interesting practice. And of course, you're dancing. You feel the ground. I love the shamanic trance dance. I'd really recommend it, by the way. So both these systems, practice approaches, so shamanic trance dance or the First Nation American systems, they practice many approaches to medicine. There's lots of natural herbs, incantations, which focus on making the body strong so that the spirituality can be developed. Then the opposite of this are other spiritualities which are more heavenly. They look outside of ourselves, the universal experience, if you like, nature. And I think, although she's on the phone, she might agree, I think Christianity is probably more akin to this. That's the way we're looking. And when I look at religions or spiritualities that are present on earth, they seem to fall into mainly one of those two camps. They all have elements of both, but they tend to sway to one side or the other. It's quite interesting. I often sort of theorize about the where these things come from, and I've spoken before about the nature of mind, and I kind of see it as a container. When you've got a container like this water bottle and you pour the water in, it takes the shape of the container. Our minds are like this. They have a particular shape. And when you pour spirituality, raw spirituality in, it takes that shape. Some of us are more grounded. Some of us are more universal looking. So you pour the spirituality in and that's what will happen. And maybe, possibly, you know, you get that to a degree in whole cultures. So the general culture of, say, the Japanese is quite disciplined and hard. So the nature of their spiritualities, when poured into that, come out disciplined and hard. So maybe that's the way these spiritualities arose. So I thought it would be nice just to do a brief little 1 minute meditation down here, just to check in with yourself. And don't think about it academically, just feel which way you are. Where does your spirituality go? Are you a grounded person or are you universal? You know, do you tend to look upward or do you tend to look down into yourself? Okay? Is that all right? So just spend a bit of time, close your eyes, and just feel. Don't think, just feel. What are you? What is your raw spiritual state? When you hear the rain on the window, which way does that draw you? Does it make you feel grounded? Or does it draw your mind to the skies? And relax. Oh, I don't know about you, I could have sat there forever. So, hands up, who's grounded? Okay. Mm-hmm. Who's universal? Mm-hmm.
Can you be a bit
Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely.
I'm up and down like a yo-yo.
Grounded today.
Yeah, I mean that's absolutely right. There's a little bit of how you feel today, what your state is today, and there's also a little bit of what your desire to be is. That creeps in as well. I think it's good to be grounded, so I'll be grounded. Yeah, so inevitably as a human being that enters. But what I'd like you to do, and Lucy, if you can pick one that you're more one way than the other, and just see if you can, see if you can sort through that. Because what we're going to do in the meditation is cultivate our opposite state. Okay? So try and remember which one you were. And you are going to cultivate that opposite state. Okay? So the meditation itself, we'll do the body scan. And then we're going to do a period of just sitting. Okay, now, if you're new to meditation, unfortunately, I've picked one of the hardest meditations you can possibly do. because there's no particular focus except for everything that comes up. But what's most important is don't follow the thoughts. Don't. Thoughts will come. Thoughts will come. The mind does that. You'll never shut it up. But thoughts will come. Just see them as another sensory experience. They have no importance. You can let them go. Just be. Just focus on the five senses. Whatever you're feeling, hearing, smelling, touching, and whatever the other one is, tasting. Yeah. So you just experience. And emotions are a big part of this, you know. Emotions come up, and of course, there are two sides to the emotion. There are the thoughts that justify it and fire it up, and then there's the raw emotion itself, the energy. And of course, where we feel that is in the heart and the stomach. So we don't experience our emotions here, we experience them down here. So in just sitting, you're tuning in to this complete porridge of experience, if you like, and just letting it be. Okay. Go for it. Yes.
You know, when you say, when you're instructed, you know, using the five senses, you said hearing, you know, smelling, you know.
Whatever the others are. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it right that, like, with this particular practice, when you say you're watching, you're observing whatever comes up, I thought it was the case that rather than asking yourself the question, what am I hearing, you know, what can I feel, etc.
What can I taste?
Yeah. I thought it was a case where you actually don't ask those questions and try and go out and find it. You actually just sit there and wait.
Spot on.
The moment you sort of notice,
yeah,
one of those comes in, you just sort of like, yeah.
Absolutely spot on. We are passive in this meditation. Mm-hmm. We're just letting everything come to us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're opening ourselves up. Now, of course, we are very, very subtle human beings, and this is the beauty of the just sitting meditation, because you are, even though you're passive, you are aware. You are actively engaged, and that's what we were talking about with Virya. You know, there is energy in this, there is presence in this. So although you're passive, you're letting everything come through, you are present and you are noticing. And that's the key thing, because you will notice that some sensations or some sounds will trigger an internal reaction. You know, Harley Davidson will go past and like, oh, that's a great sound. You know, there you go. It's an emotional reaction, or maybe a road drill will fire off outside and I might get a tightening. This is just about noticing how sensory experiences, some you go towards, you know, they're pleasant experiences. Others you try and push away. Maybe a little pain in the body, you think, oh, I don't like that.
So noticing how you react.
Yeah, being present. And thoughts associated with those reactions will emerge, because that's what happens next. The mind embellishes. Notice the thoughts are coming and let them go. And just come back to being. First time you try this, it's tough. Because you do tend to get drawn into the thoughts. They're very, very seductive. That's why we call it a practice. So what are we doing with this spiritual balancing here? Well, actually, we're going to use our internal gaze. Literally, the direction our eyes are looking. Physically looking. Either looking down or looking up. Okay, so you are going to move your eyes even though your eyelids are shut. That's a fascinating one, this. I mean, there's a lot of what was explored in the Buddha's day that is now testable through neuroscience. You know, you can stick electrodes on the head and see which bits of the brain fire up. Now, when our gaze is cast up, actually, the bit of the mind that kicks in is the part that is long-term thinking, strategic planning, if you like, looking at the world in an expansive state. It's fairly obvious, really. And it's in our language, blue sky thinking. When somebody says, let's have some blue sky thinking, we all tend to look up. We kind of can't help it. And in fact, if you read the scriptures from the great religions of the world, a lot of them will talk about moments of insight where the sage or the prophet, at that moment, they look up. Yeah. The opposite of this is taking the gaze down. And here, lo and behold, it activates the part of the brain that looks at short-term planning. It looks at, it engages that grounded nature and close concentration. Both are important. That's the key thing. So what we're going to do is go upstairs in a minute, and during the just sitting phase, I want you to remember what your particular challenge for you, Lucy, but remember what your general spiritual state was. So if you're heavenly, universal, that state, have your gaze downcast. And obviously, if you're grounded, like myself, take your gaze up. You will find you rebel against it. Okay. Just notice how you feel when you take your gaze there. You'll find it wants to wander back down or wander up again. So for the period of the meditation, stick with it. It's interesting. All right. Any questions? Should we go and do it? Right. Oh, right.